Welcome to the Laura Mayer Podcast, a podcast all about learning to walk in the mental, emotional, and relational freedom that Jesus provided for you. I am so honored for this episode today, and I'm excited for you, my listeners, to get to meet someone who you are really going to want to hear from every word that she says. So don't be distracted. Put all the distractions away. Really plug in on this conversation. I know there's a lot of wisdom that's coming your way. But I would love to introduce to you Susan Binkley. She is the founder of Blue Monarch, which is a long-term recovery program for women, or long-term recovery residential program for women and their children who are recovering from drug addiction. And let me just tell you, this woman and the stories that she has lived and breathed and walked are just phenomenal. And when you hear what she has to say, your faith is just going to grow immensely. How I first met Susan was, I don't really know how long I've known about Blue Monarch. It's been a lot of years. And I remember I would follow you guys on Facebook. And my prayer was, oh, Lord, someday I would love to get to go there. I would love to minister at Blue Monarch. And through several events, that invitation came. And I got to volunteer with you guys in 2019. But it's just a phenomenal place. Let me read to you Susan's official bio, and then I'm going to quit talking, and we're going to get going. So Susan Binkley grew up in Tennessee and received a degree in fine arts from the University of Tennessee. In addition to working as a professional artist, she owned and operated a horse farm and boarding operation, developed unique vacation rentals, and created a bakery and cafe, and established a granola manufacturing business. In 2003, Binkley founded Blue Monarch, a nonprofit long-term residential recovery program for women and their children. Awards include Women in American History Award from the Daughters of the American Revolution, the TIAA Difference Maker, and an honorary doctorate in civil law from the University of the South. Susan lives with her husband, Clay, on the Cumberland Plateau overlooking a beautiful state park. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. I feel like I have a million questions swirling in my head. But the first thing I want to let our listeners know is that you've recently written a book. Right. And that's the purpose of having you here today, along with all your other accolades. And I feel like we could talk for hours on end about the different areas that you followed the Lord in. But most specifically, recently was writing this book. So after working 20 years in the recovery world and blogging your experiences, which I've read your blog for years, what prompted you to put these stories in a book?
You know, I really feel like it's packed full of just a boatload of purposes. One thing I wanted to do was honor the journeys of the women that we serve, because really I felt like documenting their journey has really validated what they have experienced. And so it was important to me to do that. I also believe that we feel very strongly that you can be healed of addiction, that you don't have to white knuckle your sobriety, your recovery the rest of your life. And so I really wanted to tell stories that support that. And I want people to be inspired, because we actually, we see miracles happen here. And I think sometimes people don't think that miracles still happen, and that's just something that happened in the Bible a long time ago. And we see miracles happen here all the time. And I just feel like God gave me an incredible front row seat at the greatest show on earth. And so I just wanted to share that. So it was a surprise to me that I had twice as many stories as would fit in a book. So one of our biggest challenges was to cut them in half and figure out what goes in the book and what doesn't. So it's been exciting to share it.
Your motivation for wanting to share the miracles you get to see every day, that's exactly what it felt like. I devoured your book. I read this in 3 days. And I'm busy. It's not like I have a whole lot of time to sit and read, but I carried it with me. It was in my purse. It was in my car. It was by my bedside table, because it felt like I was reading a book of miracles. And I felt connected to the women in the stories, because even though my story has not been theirs, and maybe even some of the listeners, maybe they've never walked that road of recovery. I guarantee you they've walked the road of uncertainty and feeling overwhelmed and feeling like you're at the end of yourself, but then God showed up.
Mm.
So it truly felt like holding a book of miracles, that, and what a beautiful way to honor their stories. I love that.
Just the most incredible people on the planet. And so it's really been exciting to share what they're able to accomplish, because I think they're amazing. And what they do while they're in our program, we really expect them to change every single aspect of every single thing about their lives.
Wow.
And I don't think I could do that. And so, so it's just really been fun to share their stories. And I also do feel like, there's a whole population out there that is experiencing severe trauma. And I think it's important to know that. And so that's one of the reasons that I was, some of the stories are a little bit heavy, but I do feel like it's important to know the challenges and struggles that a lot of families are having out there. You know, like my Blue Monarch experience has caused me to look at the world in a completely different way. And so, I mean, I think for an example, like when you see a child at Walmart who's just completely out of control, you know, it's easy to get irritated. Like, why doesn't that mom do something? Well, when you know more about what that child has been through and the trauma that child has experienced, that child has a right to be screaming and acting out. So that's an example. Or I think even like one of the things that I realized is, how many times have we seen a car in a parking lot that's just jam packed full of stuff, and you just think, what is wrong with that messy person? Why can't they do something about that? Well, the truth is they may be living in that car. And so I think that the Blue Monarch journey for me has caused me to just see the world through a completely different lens. So that's kind of part of what I wanted to share as well.
I think that's beautiful. I remember several years ago in my quiet time, the Lord prompted me to begin to pray that I would start to see people the way He did.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what that was going to create inside of me. But I started praying that for the Lord just to help me see people the way He did.
Mm-hmm.
And the result was overwhelming compassion. And that's exactly what you're saying, that we look at people with such limited information. And your journey, it sounds like with Blue Monarch, has expanded your heart so much that now when you see someone, you realize that what you're seeing is the tip of the iceberg of their story. And you do that so beautifully in your book. You're an amazing storyteller.
Oh,
you are. You just draw the reader in. And I love that each of these stories is short. They're each about 2 to 3 pages. So it's just enough that you think, oh, just one more. Oh, let me read one more. I can fit one more in before this red light turns. You know, like you're just, I carried it with me everywhere.
Oh, red light.
I had it with traffic. It was so good. But letting us, you gave us a peek into the rest of the story, that when we, you know, would maybe want to judge something on the outside. And I think you did a great job too of showing how Jesus sees value in every single person. It was an experience to get to go through the book.
When you say that, and also what you were saying about asking God to help you see people through His eyes, that's one of the things that I've had to learn too, because I mean, this is not an easy population. You know, they, as a means of survival, they have learned to manipulate and lie. You know, there are a lot of behaviors that they gain even since childhood to help them survive. So it doesn't always make that the easiest person to spend time with or to work with. And so there are times when we get so incredibly frustrated. And so I finally got to a point where I would really have to ask God, help me see her through your eyes. And every single time he would remind me that we were sisters, you know, that we were equal. And so it would always help put things in better perspective, you know, because, and so I think that that's, I think that's one thing that is really important, especially for people who work with this population and really serve. And there's so many people out there doing that. I think it's important to always remember that your sister, you know, you're equal in God's eyes.
Amen. So, so true. So, so true. And I'm glad that God doesn't look at us and compare us among each other.
Oh, no.
He sees us as individuals. He sees our story. Mm-hmm. He sees everything we've walked through that got us to the point where we are. And he sees where he's taken us. And one of the things that I love to remind women when I minister is that every time that God looks at you, he does it with a smile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You make him smile. And I think that especially when we are trauma survivors, we have all these faulty views of how God sees us because we assume that he treats us and looks at us the same way as those that have been in our lives, with a frown or a scowl or evil intent. And that is so not him.
Well, one of them is that to teach women to look at God as a heavenly father, yeah, because their earthly father may have even sexually abused them. And so that I've figured that out really early on, is that that was going to be one of our biggest challenges, is for them to see God as a loving being, mm-hmm, and not anything like their earthly father.
Amen. So good. What has the response been to the book? I saw, mm-hmm, that it made number one in one of the categories on Amazon.
Well, it made number one in two categories.
Okay.
And I thought it was a great example of God's sense of humor, because one of them was number one bestseller in inspirational Christianity, which is awesome.
Yes.
And then it was also number one in Christian missionary, let's see, missions and missionary work, which is hilarious, because I, when I was a kid, I had decided no matter what, I did not want to be a missionary. And so it's so funny the way it turned out, because as a child, I thought I had it all figured out, that if I just didn't make eye contact with God, he wouldn't send me out to be a missionary. And so it was a kind of a tedious line, you know, to balance, where I wanted to make sure I still made it into heaven, but please don't let him notice me and turn me into a missionary. And I always felt sorry for missionaries who came and visited our church, because they always looked miserable and they always wore clothes that were like 5 years out of style. And I just thought, please don't make me a missionary. And so then, even without making eye contact, God did finally, I mean, put me into a mission field. It just happened to not be in Africa. It was in my backyard. And so I think it's really kind of hilarious that the book has ended up being number one in that category. So, like,
that was just a funny poke. That was an inside joke between you and God.
Yeah. He's going, you just thought you weren't going to be a missionary.
Wow. Wow. Two different categories. That's amazing. Do you have a favorite story from the book? I know I do. I feel like everyone I turn to is my new favorite, but I would love to know, is there one that just really stands out?
Oh, and I would be really curious what your favorite one is too.
Okay. Okay.
I think there are a lot of stories in the book that are really super special and personal to me. And so it's almost like I have two categories in my mind, because there are some that were difficult to share. One of the things that I did with this book is that I shared more personal and even supernatural experiences that I've never shared in public. And so I've made jokes recently about having dreams of nightmares of being naked on the playground, because I just felt like it was so revealing in a way that I've not shared before. So, and then some of the stories, like there's a story in the beginning of when I really realized how serious this work was going to be, that we were truly in the business of saving lives. And that story is I think it might be the very first story. And one of the reasons that I like it so much, that's one hell of a prayer. Okay, so that's the name of it. Okay, but I love the fact that towards the end of the book, there's a whole second part of that story that has really been exciting for me to share. And so I don't want to give that away here, because I think it would ruin it if you were going to read it later. But in terms of just my favorite story, I would probably say it's the one about my piano teacher, Miss Mary, who had 33 Siamese cats, but she had brought in a bobcat thinking it was a stray cat and had it living in her kitchen with a rhinestone collar on its neck. And so naturally it's like, okay, what in the world does that have to do with recovery? But I thought it was a great illustration of how that bobcat was in the kitchen. She was trying so hard to help that bobcat, thinking it was just a stray cat, which was it about tore to pieces. but it's so similar to what we see, because that bobcat was just making complete turmoil in the rest of the house with everyone else living in the house.
Yeah. And
we hear from so many families where the one who's in the home who is struggling with addiction just turns the place upside down for everyone else. And so I do feel like a lot of times parents are really struggling between what do we do to protect everyone else in the home but still help this one person in the family who's struggling. And the truth is, I really do feel like, you know, rock bottom is actually a beautiful place, because that's where you really start seeing true transformation. And so a lot of times it's a really tough decision to not keep that bobcat in the kitchen so you can help everyone else in the family, but also let that bobcat reach rock bottom. And then it's at that point that they're more likely to reach for Jesus.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's probably my favorite story.
I love that one. That one was one that I actually read aloud to my husband. He kind of followed along for half the book. I started without him. And then there was a couple I said, oh, you've got to read this one. And so I would read it aloud. He's more of an auditory listener. We went to college together. We learned to even study that way. I'm very verbal, so I love to read, and he would listen.
Oh, wow.
But I remember us reading the story of the bobcat. And we were just hee-hawing, laying there in the bed, listening, just imagining, and also imagining how her home must have smelled with that many cats.
It's still somewhere in my nose.
Yeah, you just can't get that away. You know, I love what you said about hitting rock bottom. There's another way to say that, and that is the word surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my favorite things to teach on, is teaching women how to surrender. How to just give it all up, because we don't realize we keep digging ourselves deeper. The more we try to dig ourselves out of whatever situation or problem that we're in, we're digging our grave even deeper, because the tools we're using are tools that were handed down to us from previous generations. It's very toxic ways of doing relationships. It's lots of control and manipulation. It's lots of people pleasing. We're functioning out of this place of trauma, trying to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when we surrender and say, Jesus, I am giving you all of me, the good, the bad, the ugly. What we realize after that point is when we give him all of us, we get all of him.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to my favorite story in the book. I have a couple of favorites, but I read this one a few times, and it is, why is heal a four-letter word?
Mm-hmm.
And you're detailing in that story how so much of our society believes that drug addiction is something that will always be in someone's life, that they're mm-hmm. always in recovery, that they're always an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what you teach.
Mm-mm.
You actually teach what the Bible teaches, which is he who is in Christ is a new creation. Old things are gone and new has come. So I loved hearing about specific women that have graduated your program that are now on staff with Blue Monarch teaching other women how to get free. And you even ask them, hey, do you feel like you're completely free? Or is there still a struggle under the surface that you're secretly, you know, with shame, craving to go back to this drug or, you know, craving to fall back to that? Does it still have a hold on you? And they were all able to say, absolutely not. And one of them, you said in the story, had recently been exposed to what had formerly been her drug of choice, and it just made her sick in her stomach to even be around it.
Right.
Because she wasn't that person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you teach that God heals. God does not just Band-Aid over. God doesn't just give you the strength to hunker down and get through it until you get to heaven. But he imparts true transformation and healing. And it's because you believe that, that you can teach it, and that then your women can walk in it.
Yeah. Well, it's really sad to me that the whole recovery community doesn't embrace that idea. Because we see so many people who just feel like they're doomed for life. You know, this is my life from here on out, that I'm always going to be struggling with this. I'm always going to be fighting. I'm going to constantly have to do something about it every single day. And we just don't see that. And actually, out of our staff of 14, we have 8 who have been through our program, which is incredible, because not only is our staff inspired every day of, you know, this is why we're doing this, but the women who come here can see them as well. But I think that the thing that has never made any sense to me is most people would probably agree that, yes, God does perform miracles and he can heal cancer, for instance. Well, how does it make any sense that God, I mean, is he saying, I can heal you, I can help you with the cancer, but all of you drug addicts, so stand over there, I can't do anything about that. How does that make any sense at all? And so I also believe that, I guess one of the reasons I've never really grabbed onto the concept of addiction being a disease is that we see so many different reasons for why someone started using drugs. It's almost like every woman who comes in here has a different reason. And so how could that be that you can never be healed of that? And, you know, so that's one of the things that we really try to do here is get to the root of why did you start using drugs in the first place? And when you figure that out, then you're more likely to not want to do it again.
Well, that was one of the things I was thinking about when I was preparing for our conversation is, what would you tell our listeners about recovery? Recovery from whatever it might be, because some people use drugs to numb and medicate the pain of their past. Some people use spending. Some people use sex and relationships. Some people use their career, but it's all an effort. Some people use food. It's all an effort to control and make things better on the inside. So I don't just talk a little bit about that, the reasons for addiction, and then maybe the keys to freedom.
One time I asked here, you know, why they started using drugs, and it was, I mean, just a huge grocery list of reasons. Although one that we see a lot here is that it was part of the home. I mean, a lot of our women were taught by a parent or grandparent to use drugs. But you go back to what you just said, you know, as a way to numb yourself from everything else going on around you. But we also see people who were prescribed too much and after a surgery, or, you know, lots of different reasons. But I think it also goes back to what you were saying earlier about completely surrendering. You know, we do feel like our recovery program, we call it a wheel with a lot of spokes, because we address so many issues surrounding recovery and also just being able to get your life back on track. But Christ is at the center of that. And so sometimes we get approached by other programs from across the country, and it's almost like they want to treat the Jesus component as just one of the flavors of ice cream that we just don't care to have. And it's like, okay, well, you can do all the other things that we just listed, but if you don't have that, then you're not going to have the same outcome. Yeah. And so what we see is that the women who truly, truly do surrender completely and develop a personal relationship with Jesus, that is where the true healing takes place. Mm. And then that's where the freedom, you know, there's an enormous difference in just being sober or being free of addiction. And so we're, I mean, you can easily keep people sober, but it's the freedom that we're looking for. And that's what we see people find. So yeah. we would love to think that more people would experience that.
Yeah. So that's the difference in, because I know that your program is voluntary. Women can leave if they don't, want to stay and finish.
Some of them are quit. So if they leave, but they might have to go back to jail.
Gotcha.
But we don't have a fence around the place. I mean, you can walk out anytime you want.
Yeah.
Walk off the property. You got a lot, walk a long way to get somewhere.
But those who have developed a personal relationship with Jesus for themselves. Okay. So, that's huge. If developing a personal relationship with Jesus for yourself is a key component, is what I'm hearing you say, from a woman who has worked in the recovery world for 20 years, and your program is it a 90% success rate? Is that what I heard?
I think the last that I heard, I think was 92 or 93%, which is insanely high. But we measure the first year after they graduate from our program, or they... Yeah. Employed, or did they go back to jail? Did they lose custody of their children? And what we've seen is a really, I mean, just insanely high success rate.
So you're an expert in this field, and you're telling me that the number one component is these women. With all the things you do, you teach in a parenting, they're going to require counseling. They get financial training and job career training, and they're doing all the things. But the key is a relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That should make anybody want to shout.
Mm-hmm.
Because that relationship is available to every single one of us. So it doesn't matter what is going on in our lives. Your avenue for freedom is always surrender, and it is always a deeper relationship with Jesus. And in doing that, and I'm not trying to over-spiritualize it and say there's not natural components, because you put the natural components with it. One of the things I love to teach is that we are a three-part being. We are a spirit. That's the part of us that gets born again. That's the part of us that lives forever in heaven someday. But we have a soul, our mind, our will, and our emotions. You do a lot of work in healing the soul of the women, mm-hmm. but then we live in a body. So it's all three parts of us. But when people try to skip that number one part, and that is the spirit, it doesn't matter how much work you put into these other two parts of you.
Mm-mm.
It's going to be fruitless.
Well, and this is the crazy thing, is that the Jesus component is free. It's totally free.
And undeserved.
Yes.
Unearned.
Right.
Never to be taken away.
Right.
Wow. So, so, so good. So one of the things I noticed too that I thought was really interesting is that recovery is not a part of your personal story.
Right.
But this is the area that God called you to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so interesting, because I know growing up in the church world, I don't know if anybody else ever thought this, but I think I believed that unless I had gone through a specific thing, I couldn't minister to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But your life is living proof that that's not how this works. That I'm just so grateful you did not discount and look at your own background, your own qualifications to work with this demographic, your own experience, and say, oh, no, this mm-hmm. one isn't for me.
Right.
Because that's not what God looked at when he gave you the dream. And anybody who gets this, you've got to get this book. You've got to get this book, and you've got to read How God Started Blue Monarch. It was supernatural. But God called you to an area that you didn't have personal experience in. But one of the things I did notice, a similar component, was that you have experience trusting God in the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think that
and so you're an example.
My what?
Oh, you're leading by example.
Oh, well, yes, because once I started this journey with Blue Monarch, my word, I mean, I feel like I've had 20 years of starting every single day with a trust fall, because I have never known where we were heading. I never knew where the money would come from to make it happen. And so it took me a while to finally realize it's going to kill me if I try to do it in my own power. And that's the only way to ever do anything like this. But I do feel like it was an advantage that I didn't go into this with any kind of preconceived notions about recovery. Because I feel like it gave God a complete blank slate. And I'm really by nature a think outside the box kind of problem solver. And so I feel like it was good that I had no knowledge or any experience in the past that might have given me a little bit of more of a biased opinion about how to approach recovery. So I think that was good. But I think also, I mean, my life hasn't just been a piece of cake. And I do feel like through the years, I developed just grit. And I feel like that's one of the things that I try to teach here is, you know, use the hardships that you have overcome. Use these incredible experiences that other people haven't had, and let those experiences make you stronger. And let those experiences make you more powerful. Don't let them weaken you. They make you more unique and more powerful. And so so I do feel like some of the experiences in my own life, as I look back, helped develop some of that grit that has taken to develop and run Blue Monarch for 20 years. But I like sharing it with them as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, it absolutely does. And I love too that, because I mean, isn't that what God does? God takes the ashes and he turns them into something beautiful. And I think sometimes grit is choosing to stand your ground, knowing that God's going to come through and that God's going to take what the enemy meant for evil and turn it around for good. I love that shame is not a part of your program. You're not constantly bringing up their past as a shameful thing, but you're saying, hey, give this hard thing to him and let him use that to develop grit in you, strength in you, stability in you, a determination in you that your children will not live and grow up how you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I teach a little ethics class to the women before they graduate. And I developed the class from basically all my bad experiences through lots of years of employing women of this population. And so it really deals with some of their work performance and why they have that particular work performance. But when we start out the class, they almost always have an attitude of, oh, who would ever hire me? Look, I have felony charges. I have this terrible past. I have this terrible background check, you know, all these things. And what I try to tell them is that the fact that they overcame those things, they experienced them, they survived them, they overcame them, they learned from them. That is actually a benefit. You know, that makes them a better employee. That makes them better at what they're going to do than the person who walks up who's just lived this perfect life. You know, I mean, who does live a perfect life? But I feel like those, you know, what I like to do is get them to take those experiences and let those things be proud of the fact that they have overcome them. That's not who they are anymore, but they survived it. And that's a lot to be proud of. And that the tools that they use, the strength that they had, all the characteristics and qualities that help them overcome those things can be applied in positive ways. And other people might not have that advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. You just called it an advantage. Wow. Isn't that a spin on what the devil tries to tell us about unhappy chapters in our books?
Mm-hmm.
he tries to tell us exactly what you said the women are afraid of. Who would ever hire me?
Mm-hmm.
What employer in their right mind would look at my background check and hire me? You know, that just, it made me a little teary-eyed, because I'm thinking, how many times have I had that conversation with God and said, how could you ever use me? Because of some really ugly chapters in my book. And then I just loved how you put such a spin on it, such a Christ-centered, focused spin on it, of employers look at that and they see she didn't quit.
Mm-hmm.
And see the strength that comes from that. The devil tries to talk us out of our future so often. And I love seeing, one time the Lord told me that God, and I'm not trying to, oh, there's just so many parallels. My brain is going so many places listening to you. But he told me one time, because I was in a season where everywhere I looked around me, my life felt like it was a pile of rubble. You know, we live here in Tennessee, what they refer to as Dixie Alley. We have more tornadoes here than they actually have out west. Theirs are bigger, but we have more. And so it's very normal. All of us have memories of driving past neighborhoods that a tornado had just demolished.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my life felt like. It felt like everything that was important to me was just destroyed, and there was destruction as far as I could see. And I remember just talking to the Lord about it and feeling like there was no hope. And how could God ever make anything out of this mess? Mm-hmm. And he spoke to me and he told me that he was going to take the pile of rubble, and he was going to take those bricks and he would build a platform that I would stand on to set other people free. And that was years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been interesting how, as different as he keeps growing ministry and as he keeps opening doors, the Lord will remind me that what I'm sharing that day to that group of women, like if I'm coming to Blue Monarch to get to teach, that what I'm sharing used to be called rubble. Isn't that what God loves to do with our lives? We are never at the point of no return.
Right.
We're not so far that he can't make it.
It's never too late.
Never too late. One other story I wanted to mention from the book that was so impactful to me. The woman who was losing her hearing. And the Lord prompted you one night on your way home to go back by Blue Monarch and pray for her. And for a lot of different reasons, you didn't want to do that. It was late. It was out of character. You didn't want to be weird. All the things. But the Lord was like, you got to do this. So you did. And you said that when you walked into her home, she acted like she was expecting you.
Mm-hmm.
That she was up. She was the only one in the house awake. Her light was on. And so you said, the Lord told me to come and to pray for you, because her hearing, she'd been losing it. And the doctors didn't know why. There was not a medical reason that they could point to why the hearing was. Tell us about that story.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well,
yeah, it was a mystery, because she was losing her hearing and no one could figure out why. And so when I was driving home, just minding my own business, I just really felt like God was telling me to go and pray for her. And I really tried to talk my way out of that, because it just felt so awkward. And so I didn't want to do it. But anyway, I feel like it's always been important to me to be obedient. And so usually I feel like my definition of when I feel like the Holy Spirit is asking me to do something is when I feel compelled to do something that I don't want to do. And so I felt compelled to go do something I did not want to do. So I drove in, and I was always trying to cut deals with God. And so my deal was, if I drive in and the lights are off, I'm not doing it, because if I go and wake her up in bed, that's just too weird. And so I drive in, dadgum, there's one light on. And so I walk in, it's about 11 o'clock at night, I guess, by this time. And when I walked in, she's the only one sitting there. And I thought, you have got to be kidding me. So I went over, and it was really not in my character to do something like this. And so I was like, you know, I just explained to her that I was there because I felt like God wanted me to pray for her. And then I heard God tell me, put your hands on her ears. I was going, oh, geez, that's so strange. I don't do things like that. So I put my hands on her ears and I prayed. And I really felt like God was telling me, tell her that it's safe to hear now because she's not going to hear the things that she's heard in the past. And even though she was so hard of hearing, she understood what I said. And she just immediately burst into tears. And then her hearing came back almost immediately. So I think it's a great example of, I mean, I didn't really go into that thinking I'm going to heal you or this is going to work or anything like that. I was just simply being obedient step by step.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great example of how God can use even that.
Yeah.
You know, like even because I wouldn't even if you had asked me, is it going to heal her hearing? I probably would have said, I doubt it. You know, like, I don't think I went into it with any kind of enormous faith. And but it was an incredible thing for me to see. And I think that things like that have a lot to do with how my own faith has developed through the years, because just watching things like that constantly happen at Blue Monarch has really developed my faith in a way that I didn't start out like that. So but God can use anybody to do his work.
He does. He just needs obedience. That's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
My takeaway from that story, you know, I am familiar with some different medical conditions that women have told me their stories where just debilitating anxiety, even losing their ability to walk because they were having what seemed like strokes, but it was all anxiety based. And they went to major, you know, university research based hospitals, and these hospitals are saying, basically, this is all in your mind, not like you're making it up, but there's nothing physiologically wrong with you. You're so unhealthy in your mental space that it is now overflowing and causing physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was already familiar with a few of those stories when I read the story about her ears. And what I just took away from that story was how God is always interested in getting to the root
mm-hmm.
of a problem. And sometimes we can be afraid of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling you've seen that with the clients that are, you know, the individuals that are there at Blue Monarch over the last 20 years, that because dysfunction is all they've ever known,
mm-hmm.
that freedom feels scary because it's now the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Learning new ways of doing things feels scary because it's the unknown.
Well, I think there's a fear of freedom, and there's a fear of success. And so we often see women who might even try to sabotage themselves at, you know, towards the end of this journey here at Blue Monarch because it feels so unfamiliar. The way I put it is that I think that you could miss a hangnail if you've had it every day your whole life.
Yeah.
And I think that because they have grown up with chaos and that's what they know and that's what's so familiar, then it's very unsettling when the chaos isn't there. And then we have women who don't think that they deserve success. They can look at a situation and just don't feel like they can plug themselves into that picture because it's too perfect. And so we do, we face that a lot. But also a big part of that too is that we have women who come from families that may not necessarily support their success. And I think because so many of the families that we see are just enormously dysfunctional, that for one person to step outside of that dysfunction and get healthy, mm-hmm. Sometimes it completely rocks the family tree. And people don't even know what's my role anymore, because I was always the one who needed to save her. And And so we see a lot of that too, because we don't always have supportive family members. I mean, we had a woman one time whose own mother planted drug paraphernalia under her mattress, hoping that she would get kicked out of our program. I mean, it's just things like that that make no sense. But it's not uncommon for us to see family members who are just not supportive of that one person getting healed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes against what we might expect, but I do feel like one of the things that is important about Bull Monarch is that we truly change the normal for the child, because it's not unusual for a child to be for up to 3 years if the mother goes through maybe an 18 to 24 month core program, an additional year in our graduate program, that child might be here 3 years. So that's a huge chunk in that tiny little life.
Yes. And
so we're excited about the fact that we can break that cycle, where then what becomes familiar to them that they're always going back to is healthier and more like what we have here.
Yeah.
And we see that. I mean, we have teenagers now who lived with us as toddlers, and they will come back and visit and say, I want my children to live like I did here. I want my grandchildren to live like this. And we even had a boy who lived here as a 4-year-old. And after he and his mom moved out for several years during spring break, he always had his grandparents bring him back to Blue Monarch because that's what felt like home. And so that's where we really feel like we can break that cycle and become the new normal for that family.
Wow. We could talk about these stories all day long. Is there anything else you want to share today? And please do. And then tell everybody where they can get a book. You need a book. You need one for you, your mom, Mother's Day's cut. Like, you just buy a lot of them.
Well, I mean, I guess if there's anything else that I want to say is that I just feel like it's important to remember, you know, one of the things that happens often is when I go around and speak to different groups, a lot of times I see someone out in the audience who's very tearful. Sometimes they're tearful over the story that I'm sharing, but a lot of times they'll come up to me after and they're tearful because they have regrets that they feel like God also had a call for them, or had asked them to do something in the past and they had resisted it and not done it. And they had great regrets for that. And so I hate seeing that, because I feel like if I look back on my experience, and I'm not saying that God's asking everyone to go out and do a Blue Monarch. I don't believe that at all. But I hate to think of what I would have missed out on if I had just said no. And so I would encourage people to really listen to that. And step out of that box and have the courage to just say, to be obedient and say yes, because I do feel like we miss out on tremendous blessings when we say no. And so that's the one thing that I would probably want to add. But also, you can get our book on our bluemonarch.org website. We have a store because we also make granola. It's really good. And we have other gift items. And the book is available there. One advantage of buying it straight from us is that it can be signed, but it's also on Amazon. And Amazon, it's also available in ebook and audiobook. And I recorded it myself, so it's actually recorded by me, which was a dreadful experience, but I'm glad that we did it. And that's on Amazon, and the name of it is From My Front Row Seat.
I don't think did I even say the name of your book? I don't know that I did. I was so excited when we opened. I don't think I did. But yes, From My Front Row Seat, a collection of stories from my time working alongside women in recovery. Wow. Thank you, Susan, so much for being here today. I'm going to put a link to Blue Monarch in the show notes. So if anybody that's listening on podcast, it'll be show notes, or YouTube, just scroll down, you'll see the links. Also the Amazon link, but goodness, get it from Blue Monarch so that you can get it signed by Susan. Yes. And while you're there, shop for granola. The granola is made there on site, mm-hmm. and your kitchen employs women who are there in the program.
Right.
And it's really, really good granola. That's what my family buys. It's funny. We had a family gathering recently, and my cousin was bringing salad, like the fruity sweet with like strawberries kind of on its salad. And she walked in with a granola to put on the salad, and it was out of the blue granola. Oh. Like, it's so good. But then also you have lots of gift items on the website, and people can also learn a little bit more about Blue Monarch there. Maybe this is something that their hearts have been activated about, and they want to get involved in some way to support the mission that's happening there. Or they might even have a loved one, or maybe even themselves, that is in the bondage of addiction, and they're ready to get free.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure they can find all that kind of information on the website.
We have an application on our website, and they can fill that out, and it has instructions how to get it back to us.
Okay. All right. So. I'll put all the links. So thank you, Susan, for being here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. We had a lot of fun. Good to see you. And you have the sweetest voice.
Oh,
I think you could chew me out in that sweet voice, and I would still walk away feeling really good.
Oh, thank you so much. My kids would not agree. But thank you. Goodness, I love everything you're doing there. The thing that, because I have not really got to spend a lot of time with you. I met you briefly when I first started coming to Blue Monarch, and everyone is always busy. Your staff is working hard every time.
Mm-hmm.
But just watching you from afar, but getting to know you through your people. As I've gotten closer to the women that work there, who were maybe in the program, but now mm-hmm. working there, how they quote you, how they talk about you, but then also just seeing the fruit in their lives. I think that the thing that has struck me the most is the level of obedience that you walk in is very inspirational.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So
it's important to me. So.
Yeah. The level of obedience. So I'm walking away from this conversation challenged. Thank you everyone for listening today to the Laura Mayer podcast. Join us here again next week where we will continue learning that being His means being free.